Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Nashville-based singer-songwriter Tim Easton. His latest album, Fire Horse, is out February 20th. We discuss the making of the album, as well as some of the record's lyrical themes, and Easton's thoughts about being a sober touring musician. That's Tim Easton on Into Music, coming up now. I just have to say, I love the nod to Fire Hose in the...
That's like it's like an inside bit that I did for everybody in their 50s and older, or 40s and old, I don't know, you know, whatever age group. Like, that's all it is. Musically, this album has nothing to do with the band Firehorse. I love Mike Watt. I am from Ohio, like Ed from Ohio. And it's just a nod. It's just a tip of the hat to independents and independent bands of my youth.
Where did this one kind of start for you? Did you, you know, I assume that you're kind of probably in a relatively regular process of writing, but does there come a time, like in the calendar year, where you're like, okay, it's time to collect and go into the studio?
Well, a lot of people would say the autumn, but I feel like I'm in the autumn of my whole existence right now. So I, you know, any season's a good time for creativity. I travel a lot, that inspires a lot. So this painting that's behind me is, it was a gift from my sister years ago. And this is my couch. I'm at my house. I write a lot on this couch. And all through the pandemic, I was on this couch writing or Zooming. And I just got a lot of work done. And eventually I looked it up. I was like, oh, I'm a fire horse. I knew that from born in 1966. You know, it's like just the year. Like if you go to a Chinese restaurant and you look at a menu, you'll see that, you know, you're either a goat or a sheep or a rooster or a rat or a dragon or whatever. And I'm a horse. And, you know, I didn't really know much about it other than that. And then I found out that I was a fire horse and that was the year 66 and that I looked it up about a year ago or more. Either way, I was like, oh, the year 2026 is going to be a fire horse year. I'll work hard now of the songs that I've written underneath this horse. I'll use that as the cover and I'll start to bring together songs. And I write so much that I really had to shed songs, you know, but I built an album with somewhat of a theme. And really the theme is just, you know, my life of inspiration and getting to travel and trying to uplift others and trying to help others and be a good mentor and to honor my mentors and all the people that taught me and stuff. So that's really what it is. It was just fortunate timing. I was like, oh, okay, I'll put out the album called Firehorse as the week of the year the Firehorse starts, which is right about now. And I'm getting, since because of that, I'm getting all these things on my feed, and my algorithm is feeding me all these like elderly spiritual types talking about the seriousness of the fire horse. And I'm like, oh God, I better see what's going on here. So I don't mean to be naive. It just was timing. And yeah, you know, it's a thing. It's part of my life.
I'm interested in that thing that you mentioned about travel, because that does crop up in the songs. And you lived the busking life and everything. How important was that for you just as a young man, like just being able to see the world, maybe not see the world of like, oh, I'm going to take the grand tour of Europe, but I'm going to see like this, the way that people really live in these places and so forth.
These are just the things that like my heroes did, people like Jack Kerouac or Woody Guthrie. You know, when you eventually dig down past the surface level of what's on the radio and maybe you heard some Beatles and Stones and some Bob Dylan, and you figure out from them that you got to go back to Buddy Holly and then Lightning Hopkins and et cetera. And you keep going back. eventually you're like, well, how am I going to write songs? So I just had to travel. That's I just figured I wanted to be a songwriter, but I didn't have a whole lot to write about. You know, I'd studied poetry, I'd studied writing, I was reading, but I didn't have a whole lot of life experience. So that's what it was. I was like, I'm going to go be a rambler. And you can't hitchhike around America, really, per se. I mean, it wouldn't be advisable, although I have in Alaska a few times, not too long ago. But Europe, in Ireland, for example, hitchhiking was accepted form of transportation. You know, you'd go over there and you'd find out that John Prine was playing in Galway, so you'd hitchhike up to see him. And I just it's I'd say the importance was the action I took to get out of my hometown and wherever I was. That helped then create the stories that led to what I'm the way I write now, and led me to cross paths with people like Townes Van Zandt or Lucinda Williams and people that were great songwriters that then in turn, in Lucinda's case, became mentors to me in regards to like observing them write and how dedicated they were and how passionate they were and how they told the truth about their lives no matter what. Yeah, you learn from getting out of your comfort zone. And man, did I ever do that. You know, there are nights that I slept in the park, you know, in Barcelona and stuff. I just remember some of those nights weren't so easy. You know, if it rained a lot, you couldn't play on the streets very much and it was hard to make a living. And next thing you know, you're broke. And so yeah, that's the dream right there.
So I would imagine that those initial experiences are probably something that have carried through for you, where when you do get to travel, you do get to hear other people's stories or see different perspectives and things like that, and that feeds
Yeah.
the well.
I feel like I understand America better than say someone who's yapping off about this and that. It's like when someone makes fun of a place, I tend to defend it. You know, if someone maligns a city like Cleveland or Baltimore, I'm like, I've been to both those places and had amazing experiences, so you don't know what you're talking about. You know, like people like to lump things together, either it's from sports or politics or something. But I feel like also I feel like I have a grounds to speak about my country and grounds to speak about the world and humanity just from basically being immersed in it for nearly 60 years. And the traveling started early. My family moved to Japan when I was in the second grade. So I was in a big airplane crossing the ocean, going to Japan and then back to Canada for summer camp because my dad worked for Goodyear. That's why I'm Akron, Ohio is where I went to high school. And my dad worked for Goodyear and the company transferred him over there. And that had a major impact on my life. And it also probably got me used to traveling, you know? Like some people can travel and some people just they freak out. They can't do it. I'm a little bit of both these days because traveling is not as easy as it used to be for me. But it's immeasurable and absolutely impactful on my creativity today. And I would advise it to anybody that I was like wondering what to do. It's like you're worried about, you know, getting a manager or an agent or whatever the creative. It's like, forget all that shit. Go to Alaska, get a job in Alaska, waiting tables or working at a resort and spend one summer up there. You'll make a lot more money and you'll have way more adventures and you'll be a songwriter at the end of it.
It's fun. So I studied creative writing, and when I was coming to the end of my studies, you know, I was thinking like, I'm gonna try and, you know, get a professorship or something. And my advisor took me aside and he said, "Get a job delivering refrigerators, and you're gonna see this whole milieu that you won't experience in academia."
Yeah. You know, I agree. I remember them telling me I was an English major. I remember them saying, "Oh, you're either gonna be a teacher or you're gonna be a writer. So you're gonna do one, you know." And I was like, "Well, and I love teaching and I love my teachers and I love talking about them. Some of the great ones, like the huge impact on me." But I remember thinking, "Well, I want to write, so I'm gonna hit the trail." And you know, overseas when I was busking, I wasn't just busking. You know, I was a night watchman. I was a bartender. I was a waiter or a busboy. They never let me wait tables. That was one step beyond my abilities. They let me bus tables and wash dishes, is what they did. Yeah, which I loved. The dishwasher was a great job. You talk about John Prine always talking about the mail route, and Bukowski talking about delivering the mail. Those guys are just really, they're better at it. You know, they're better at the creativity. They got really good at like writing these amazing things while they were out there in this monotonous job. And that's a lot of the story of me as a dishwasher. You know, I was like, you know, you're on your own and you're just creating. So I agree with that assessment. Get a job doing something that's non-professorial and meet some real people and you'll have some real stories.
I spent some time in a dish room myself, and you're just kind of staring at the wall as the dishes come through. But then like you get all the, I think, I don't know, my experience was I got all the really good gossip because the wait staff would come in and, you know, that's where they complained about things.
You are the lowest man on the totem pole at the restaurant as the dishwasher. And so there's no pressure. Yeah, maybe just get a job somewhere else then.
I'm eavesdropping.
Yeah. I tell you, it changes your dishwashing life. You know, today I hate doing dishes, but now today I've moved over to the side of like, oh, I get to wash my own dishes. I have a house and I get to be grateful about it instead of complaining about it. So it's like an old Buddhist expression, man. When you're cleaning the glass, clean the glass, you know, just do what you're doing. Keep it in front of you. Focus on that. And everything will work itself out.
Something else on the record is that I love the production touches. It's not like this overwhelming thing, but there are times where it's like, well, this isn't just an acoustic guitar song. There are these little things, little added ear candy and so forth, but it's always at the right time. How do you kind of know when you're like, I'm going to add this little, you know, grit in this piece?
That is 100%. Okay, it's 95% Mr. Kevin Nolan, the producer of this record. He's a friend of mine. He's a younger musician. I believe he's in his 30s now. He works as a he's working for Lainey Wilson. He's on tour with her right now in Australia. And in fact, the bass player Tommy Cyphers and the drummer Matt Nolan, who's Kevin Nolan's brother, those three musicians who live here in Nashville all work for Lainey Wilson. They're all part of her backing band. Kevin is a young, you know, just a budding producer who's also one of those classically talented cats that plays the piano and the guitar, everything really well. You know, he went to Loyola, I believe, I think, down in New Orleans. He went to school down there and, you know, is a jazz aficionado. And he's multi-talented, man. And he's starting to produce records. So that was him putting the grit and the dirt and doing the mixing, the shifts of what came in and out. And then eventually Brad Jones put the final mix on it. But that's Kevin Nolan, man. I can't say enough about him. If you're listening to this and you want to look him up, he's out there working. He makes jazz albums, his own stuff, but he's producing all kinds of songwriters. Kevin Nolan, Nolan. That's, he decided where the grit went, and I was pleasantly surprised, gotta say.
So that's a trust thing on your part, which is like, this is my song, but hey, I, you know, let's see what you come up with. So it really becomes a collaboration.
Yeah, that is letting go and accepting that you've chosen someone really talented to work with. So let them do their thing. If something like, you know, there was like two or three things where I was like, I think I could have done that better. Or could you find another version of me singing that line? You know, this is common album making stuff. It's this, the how the sausage gets made, which annoys most people, but like musicians are into it, whatever. But, you know, we sing the song, we play the song live in the studio. And then I'll sing it a few more times on top of that track. And then, you know, we do what it might be a vocal comp, and then maybe we'll grab a few parts from the overdub and throw them in there. And that's just the reality of modern record making. It's mostly live, but yeah, there's been a few repairs are made. And then a few repairs are not made as well, instrumentation wise, because that keeps it human. That's why my record sounds different than what's on the pop radio station. Cause those records are run through. Nothing is out of, you know, the kick drum and the bass guitar line up exactly. There's no give and take in it at all. And that is not human. And that's why I'm going to sound like an old man here, but that's okay. That's why everything on the radio kind of sounds exactly the same to me. I know there's different things and there's great songs. I'm not that much of a curmudgeon, but there's always cool hits that comes through and I love it. But pretty much everybody's using the same Pro Tools, the same computers, the same plugins, the same thing. So everything starts to sound the same. And a really funny thing is to me, is that Bob Dylan was saying this in the 80s. He was like, there's a recording of him going like, have you noticed how everything sounds the same? And it's like 1986 or something, or 92, whatever. It's like, yeah, Cyndi Lauper and Prince and Men at Work, everything, like for him, everything was sounded the same. His old man brain was already there. But it's like today, things do sound pretty much, they sound, pop music and country pop and what's it, they kind of sound like the same music now. The drums are the same, it's weird. Or it's just today. And that's my old man speech, and I'm sticking to it.
I wonder if for you maybe sometimes that approach might come into just the writing itself, where maybe you're working on a song and you're like, I like where this is going, but I think that this sentiment has been in a lot of songs and
Yes.
I don't know what I'm going to add. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just really remarkable when you take a guy like Ed Sheeran, for example, or something. It's like when he's by himself on an acoustic guitar, you're like, he's really good at that. He delivers it really well and it's beautiful. But then when it comes into a studio, they do all this layering stuff on it that you didn't even know that it was once just a guy on an acoustic guitar. And I'm always impressed with it. I'm like, wow, I can't do that, But Kevin, yeah, like every now and then you'll hear something. Like there is one spot on the album when I started laughing because it reminded me of like a Pink Floyd song from my high school eras, and it's like it's on the track and it stayed in there because it's very funny. It's like, oh, here comes the big guitar solo, and it was very 80s or 70s or 80s vibe to that. It's okay. Every now and then you tip the hat to the things that influence you. And by God, I listened to a lot of Rolling Stones and Beatles albums, and I'm sure there was some Pink Floyd in there from my brother's record collections, and some Todd Rundgren and some Warren Zevon. So there is some classic rock that is just seeps through, and eventually you get to be my age where you just don't care anymore. And I'm not trying to say I don't care at all when I'm making records and try to craft something different and unique. But every now and then you just have to let go and say, oh, it's beautiful the way you just leaned into that. We all grew up on classic rock for the most part. I feel lucky that I got to hear that stuff. I feel lucky that I got to listen to Led Zeppelin in the 70s. Very lucky. And I think it's really fun to for my daughter who's 15 to all of a sudden hear a Zeppelin track and be like, wow, this okay, that's pretty, it's pretty strong. The sounds of it are so strong and big compared to like whatever a Post Malone record that's out on the radio now. It's just like the sound, if the analog sound is superior in that way of like the reality of it, the thickness of it, something about it. And so yeah, just grateful that I got all that old stuff in the brain still.
I want to ask about a couple of specific songs.
Yeah.
Don't Let Your Mind Grow Dark, which,
Wounds.
yeah, it's just one of that was just one of those things where it was like just the kind of where life is and everything. It was like, okay, I needed to hear that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've been getting a lot of notes like that. A lot of people have been sending me messages about that song, and it feels very good. I'm talking to myself. I'm giving a pep talk to myself as much as a friend that was hurting at the time. And I think I even say that in the lyrics. It's like when I'm talking to you, I'm also talking to me. So it's like I'm turning the finger pointing around to like, I need help too. Thank you for being there while I express this. And that's just a one chord song. That's one chord, one E chord, in an open tuning. I think I go to a seventh chord. So there's like, but it's all just one chord, which is a throwback to the folk and blues of which I, started studying way back when, when I was a street musician. And so it's a very simple song. But Kevin Nolan, again, just really crushed it with the production in that. He raised and lowered some things and brought in some backing vocals and did so much on that one chord song to make it bop along like that. And I think stretch it to out almost to 5 minutes or something. The song's very fresh. I wrote it and recorded it within a few days. So it's like brand new. I just wrote it and I brought it to the band and we were set up in the studio already. We had about 8 or 9 songs in the can already. And that was one of the last ones. And it was brand new. So it is my favorite song on the album and the one I wanted to present first, mostly because it is so fresh and so simple and has a very direct message in the and it would have been good for any times, but it just so happens that this time there is some challenging things going on in the world, but this could be applied to anybody anywhere in the world at any time because we're all going through something, That's just the fact.
I'm not trying to be maudlin, but for me, it's just the process of aging where it's like I work with one of my best friends, and I feel like about every other week I'm going out to his desk and saying, "Hey, I just got a text that so and so passed," or and you trying to just stay in that thing of like, "But we're still alive. We still, but on the other hand, don't forget how fragile it is."
Yeah, you got a 24-hour day. It's like 8 hours of sleep, 8 hours of work, if you're lucky. That leaves 8 hours to play, or eat, or on your way to work and sleep. And you have to take some time to mourn the difficulty things. I just had a brother that passed away, and it's on my mind every day. He taught me how to play the E chord like that, how to Travis pick the E chord like that. Pretty much that was. He taught me about the blues, my brother Bob. And it was watching him play and watching my uncle play and watching my brother's wife, Mary, play that first inspired me, and still does. And so I think it's important to take the time and then also be grateful for the good times you had together and that, yeah, you're still alive, you're still going, you still have some service work to do. There's always someone out there that you can call on the phone and ask to see how they're doing and mean it and try to get out of your own difficulties that way. That's basically how we get through it all these days. Have you ever noticed, Ben, walking down the road and like an older guy passes you and or older person passes you and they smile and they're like, "Hey, how's it going?" And now I know why. It's because they're super grateful to just be walking and alive right now, And it's like, oh yeah, they're like not feeling the pain of the body and the spirit that just comes with growing older. And I love it when someone that turned 40 is like, "Oh God, I'm getting older. Oh, this hurts," or whatever. And they're 40 and you're like, "Oh man, I would kill to be 40. Kill."
Condolences about your brother. That's
Thank you so much. He taught me very much, and he's with me every night. And he died the same day that Todd Snyder died, who also had an impact on my life. So I was in Spain, and I just every night I'd play a Todd Snyder song using the chords, the picking patterns that my brother taught me. Yeah, very grateful for the lessons I learned from my brother and my other. I have 4 brothers and 2 sisters. And so very big family and very creative family and very lucky to have them.
I want to talk too about Another Good Man Down, which I think kind of ties into some of what we're talking about.
That song is really like I was, there's all these songs about drugs and the drug experience, and not many of them tend to point the finger at the supply side of it, I mean, there's songs about dealers and this and that, whatever, but I don't know. I just wanted to write something different about. I've seen so many casualties along the way, in my life, and so many. It's just so sad, And so that was the only thing. I was like, oh, there's another person that I, love and respected. Is kind of just going down that path that you can't can't do anything about it. You could say something if you wanted, and you surely we all try, family members, friends, whatever. But in the end, they have to decide what they're going to do about it, and or they have to hit some kind of bottom that changes it. But yeah, that song, I was just like, oh, I want to write. You know, there's so many cocaine songs. There's so many of them, and I was never a big cocaine guy. I'm sober now, but it wasn't like some. You know, of course, I did all the things. You know, at one point in my life, and I'm not embarrassed about it. I don't. You know, I'm not going to shut the door on it either. I'm just kind of like it's there, and I did that, and there was, I had to go experiment, you know, in my lifetime. And I'm glad that today that's not the situation. But I still, you know, I see it, and I see the damage it did, and I see I've lost friends, you know. And so I just wanted to write a song about that part of it, about dressing like, and put a whimsical slide together for it. So that song has been, I've been writing that song for a decade. I've recorded it before, but this time I was like, I want to bring it to a band and slam it like that. And I'm really pleased with the way that one came out. And I'm glad you got to hear it. And that's the other song that people have been writing me about. For some reason, yeah, it's side two, the Don't Let Your Mind Grow Dark, Another Good Man Down, and the Hallelujah song are the songs that people have been writing about the most.
With sobriety, like, is that, do you think that it's easier today than maybe it was like 15 years ago or something to stay sober on the road?
Not if you're in a deep obsession with addiction, I wouldn't say it's any easier, but it's less shameful to admit that you need help today. Right, there's a lot of resources around us. It's less shameful in the world to order a non-alcoholic beer now. That's also very prevalent and available, and so today it's a little easier to and if you're no, there, you're noticing the numbers with the younger people too. They're not as partaking as much as generations older generations did. So on the road. You still, I think, you know, I still, you need a support group. And I would advise anyone to get a support group and to not take to the road very soon without getting some kind of foundation underneath you. And let's face it, it's pretty easy to find that foundation today. You know, it doesn't take much research to figure out how you can do it. It's just nobody wants to do it. Nobody wants to do the 12 steps. Of course not. You know, nobody wants to be a part of that situation. No one comes through the door like, oh, I can't wait to just surrender my whole life to something, you know. But it's all everybody's mistaken. Everybody that thinks they know what it is mistaken. And I'm here for anybody that wants to talk about it, really. It's part of what I do in life now, and it's part of what I do as a traveling musician. And I'm often talking to men that are people that are trying to alter their path and kind of leave some of the dark stuff behind. And so it's I think yeah, it's easier now, but it's also not easy if you don't try, if you don't first just stop. You know, you got to stop somewhere. That's the hardest part, right? And then it's like, oh, how do I live life now? And so that's where it can be challenging. But yeah, give me a call.
You've been listening to a conversation with singer-songwriter Tim Easton. His new album, Firehorse, is out February 20th. You can learn more about him and see his latest concert dates at timeaston.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, we'd like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson.